We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Jim Wolfe. We'll be talking with him by phone. Are you in your home in Indianapolis, Jim? Is that right?
I certainly am.
Great. Well, we can hear you fine. We might let listeners in on a little sort of secret. You and I get a chance to hear the end of All Things Considered before we start, and we just heard of Professor Scott Galloway, an email that he sent a student telling him to get his together and to get the easy stuff right. Do you consider following seven religions like you do easy, or is that much harder?
It's easy because if you find something you like in a religion, you can just say, well, I affirm that also. So you don't have to find the one best and only religion. You can gather in from different religions.
Let me let listeners know a little bit about your background. You're a long-time teacher and writer and computer programmer, and you have a lot of degrees and a lot of things. I'll get to that in a little bit, but let me just read the last paragraph of a book of yours that came out in 2008, so 2 years ago. In this last paragraph, you say, "My motto is, why have one religion when you can have several? From my Jewish faith, I derive a commitment to justice and to Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. From my Christian faith, I add love and forgiveness. From my Buddhist faith, I generate compassion and paying attention. From my Taoist faith, I practice inner peace and flexible strength. From my Muslim faith, I practice kindness and concern for the poor. From my Wiccan faith, W-I-C-C-A-N, from my Wiccan faith, I recover closeness to nature and protection from Mother Earth. From my humanist faith, I venture into freedom of thought and building a human community. I celebrate all this religious diversity within myself and among us." Well, it's been 2 years since you wrote that. Have you changed? Have you added any religions or subtracted any or changed your mind?
No, it's pretty much where it is. I've fleshed it out some in an additional paper, but that's pretty much still where I am.
And what led you on this path to begin exploring and practicing several religions instead of just one?
Well, Judaism, of course, is a kind of a sister faith to Christianity, and in college.
But you began as a Christian?
Yes, yeah. In fact, I'm an ordained Presbyterian minister, and I was in college. I was already taking Greek. In fact, New Testament Greek is easy Greek compared to Plato and Homer. But I would go off to the, every once in a while on a Friday night, to a synagogue service, and I kind of fell in love with Jewish prayers.
And that was why you were in a Protestant seminary.
Yeah, then after that I went to a Protestant seminary. And further on in my career, I went to Berkeley, and that's where I ran into Eastern religions. And I was very much, still am, a lot of me, a Protestant activist, trying to make the world better, working for peace, working for justice. And it was just very refreshing and different to have an emphasis on meditation. And the Buddha didn't say it, but Daniel Berrigan put the words in his mouth. Don't just stand there, do something is what we say. The Buddha says, don't just do something, stand there.
So you found that a helpful addition to what you already had from Christianity and Judaism.
Right, right. And I really didn't pay much attention to Islam until 9/11, and then I looked into it, and the one thing I like the best is that doing good things for poor people, which is part of most every religion, sort of, is one of the five pillars of Islam. So that's what impressed me. And I don't have to like everything about a religion to pick up the part that I do and incorporate it into mine.
Now, is that true of where you began with Christianity as well? Are there just parts of that that you accept?
Yeah. Life after death doesn't make sense to me. And a lot of people's theories about atonement don't seem to work for me. And I see Jesus as a practicer of nonviolence and nonviolent resistance to empire. And so I pick up on that stream within Christianity more than others.
And let's talk about Taoism then and Wiccan and humanist.
Sure. Well, the kind of Buddhism I ran into in California and liked especially was Zen Buddhism. And Zen Buddhism is based on Chan Buddhism in China, which was a mixture of Taoism and Buddhism. So I kind of, once I decided I kind of liked Zen Buddhism, and especially Zen Buddhist stories are just so great. I decided I should look into the background, and there's a book of poems called the Tao Te Ching, 81 poems, and I just love that book. I'm a poet myself, and I think poetry can often express better than discursive, descriptive language what religions are trying to get at. And one theme in common between Christianity and Taoism is that what's apparently weak is really strong. In Taoism, the hero is water. You step in water, it steps aside. But water can penetrate the rocks and freeze and break the rocks open. So here's something that looks weak but is really strong. And that's what St. Paul says about Jesus, that Christ crucified looks like folly to the Greeks and a stumbling block to the Jews, but to those who are being saved through him, it's the power of God and the wisdom of God revealed. So I find parallels sometimes between some of the different religions.
And Wiccan?
Well, this one took me the longest. This is what the ancient religion was before any of the world's great religions came on the scene.
Or at least that's one of the theories.
Yeah. It was oriented to making the crops grow, and I'm scientific enough that I think it's sunlight and photosynthesis and rains and soil that make the crops grow. So what ancient Wicca did isn't really what I'm interested in doing. So I stopped writing my book for about 3 years while I tried to figure out what to do about Wicca, and then I did what I did with every other religion, is don't take the parts that don't resonate with you, but take the parts that do. So being close to nature, particularly in this era when we may be facing global warming and destruction of the environment, taking care of Mother Earth is a big emphasis in Wiccan religion, which is kind of an umbrella term for me that would include American Indian religion.
Now, wouldn't being a humanist conflict with some of these religious ideas? Don't humanists think that all the world there is what we can sense with our senses and use rationality and science to make decisions?
One kind of humanism is that way, and often we mean, when we say humanism, we mean secular humanism, but some of the earliest humanism was Christian humanism, and I think that religion is a human enterprise, but not worthless because of that. And it's symbolic in what it often asserts. So I definitely believe in being scientific, not reductionist scientific, not like science is the only thing that is, but I think that faith and belief are very, very different from each other. Faith is trust, and I think faith is very important, My beliefs can change a lot, and I want my beliefs to be compatible with whatever we know in science. Science, I think, has its limits. It's only good at what it does. It can't tell us everything, but I think it tells us very accurately what it does tell us.
In terms of philosophy, in terms of what you think is real, is there a spiritual reality in addition to a physical and natural reality?
I guess I would go with Whitehead at this point and see physical and mental poles in every actual entity, in all creatures.
Whitehead, a process philosopher?
Right, right. And so I think we show whatever our spirit is by the way we act. I think the spirit is known by its fruits.
Let me introduce our guest again for folks who may have tuned into Keeping the Faith late today. James S. Wolfe, W-O-L-F-E, is our guest, speaking to us by phone from his home in Indianapolis. He's a recently retired professor and computer programmer, and we might just let me give the phone numbers, Jim, so that people can call with comments or questions, but then I want to get into your academic background just to let people know what you've studied officially. The phone numbers, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-9455. That'll put you in touch with our studio, and Kyle Croa, our engineer, will answer the phone and put you in line to talk with our guest. If it's a long-distance call, you can use a toll-free number. In fact, we encourage that, 1-800-222-9455. So if you're listening on the Internet, anywhere in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-9455. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area of Illinois, 333-9455. Jim, you started off in Oberlin. Where did you grow up?
Oh, in suburban New York City on the New Jersey side.
How did you end up at Oberlin in Ohio?
My older brother had been there. I'm sure that's a factor, and it's a very academically well-gifted place. So it was a good challenge, and it had a history of taking part in the Underground Railroad and anti-slavery kind of issues, so I think I liked the social justice emphasis in the school's history as well.
And you mentioned in your 2008 book, A Song of Faith, that it was there that you met some black students and got involved early on in the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And was it before you went to seminary that you went to, was it Cleveland?
No, after seminary.
After seminary. I'm sorry, I got that out of order. So then you went to Union Seminary in New York.
That's true.
And what was your experience like there? That was a Protestant, Christian, very ecumenical, progressive
right,
seminary.
And very open-minded. And I did a master's thesis there on a functional Christology, which had to do with when you say things, theological things, you may be making commitments rather than just trying to describe something. So
you were saying that things that people believed about Jesus may actually affect what they do.
Yeah, how's that for a radical concept? to call Jesus Lord may say less about Jesus and more about your own commitments.
Uh-huh. Jim, I want to get back to your academic path, but we do have a caller on line one, and I do want to get to this person in Champaign, not keep them on the phone too long. Yes, go right ahead. You're on the air with our guest, Jim Wolfe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was raised Catholic, but I don't really have a Christian view of the world at all anymore. But I do miss the community of belonging to a church. But I don't want to deceive people and go to a church and pretend like I believe what they're talking about when I don't. And I'm wondering if you encountered people who were dealing with this, and I'll just take my answer off the air.
Sure. Thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate it.
Well, sure. It's very common, and a lot of people these days would, for instance, call themselves spiritual but not religious, and they're not real interested in what institutionalized churches are doing. When I teach religious studies, I recognize seven different dimensions of religion. In fact, the one requirement I teach at IUPUI in Indianapolis, a religious studies course. The department has one requirement, and that is that we deal with each of the seven dimensions. The one most known is a doctrinal dimension, and people often confuse religion just with religious doctrines. But in addition, there are stories, the mythological dimension. There's rituals that people go through in terms of religious services. There's the aesthetic dimension, which the Catholic Church is very rich in terms of smells and bells, things to hear and smell and see. And there's an ethical dimension and a social dimension, which may be partly what you're missing by not being there. So there's all these, and of course the experiential dimension, in terms of whatever your own religious experience is. And I don't think you're cheating or whatever if you go to a religious group for whatever you want to get out of it. I think that's your prerogative. I know my mother would go to worship services, and she'd listen to the minister just long enough to get her going, thinking her own thoughts, and then she'd tune them out and do her own thing. And I thought that was pretty nifty. So I think you should feel free. And maybe go around and visit some different groups. I go to a Buddhist sangha and do a half hour of seated meditation and a half hour of walking meditation and then some talking. And I like it for a change of pace. So I think people should feel, and including yourself, just feel very free to go where you want to go and do what you want to do.
Jim, you mentioned your mother's technique of listening to sermons. I once had someone who had been in my congregation for some time tell me, well, Steve, you know, I've never heard a bad sermon here, and I started to feel real good about that until he went on and explained that, yeah, when you get to talking about stuff that's just nonsense, I just think about other things.
Right.
Which is a perfectly acceptable way to go to church, I think.
Sure.
Or other religious activities. Let's get back for a minute to your academic path. After you went to Union Theological Seminary in New York, you then got a Ph.D. in religion and society out at Berkeley from the Graduate Theological Union. What did you focus on there?
Well, I did a couple different things. The thesis itself was on the Kennedy myth as a religious phenomenon. So the kind of the religious side of politics. I looked at the Kennedy campaign and Kennedy's presidency and the assassination and how people responded to it. I recognized three types of civil religion. And civil religion is the way people relate in a religious way to their nation. And you can deify the nation. That's called archaic civil religion. And whatever the country goes for must be good stuff. Or you could take a modern civil religion in which the individual is deified, and whatever people sort of collectively come up with as in their self-interest is the thing to do. Or an historic civil religion in which there's some kind of transcendent values or God, and you try and shape your national policy in that direction. So I looked at Kennedy in terms of how much of each kind of civil religion. Besides that, I was also in a research project on new religious consciousness and wrote up about three Protestant congregations and the degree to which they exhibited counterculture values. This was in the very late 60s, early 70s, when the California counterculture was big. And how did some of the churches respond?
And you were in a good spot from Berkeley to look into that. Jim, we do have another caller, again on line one, a caller from Champaign. You're on the air with our guest, Jim Wolf.
Hi. I have a suggestion for the woman who is looking for a church where she doesn't need to agree with all the doctrine. I'm a Quaker, and we don't have much doctrine. And people share out of the silences, they're moved. And the local one is at 1904 East Main in Urbana and meets at 10:30 on Sunday mornings. And we're also having an event next Saturday at 5 p.m. from Right Sharing of World Resources. We'll be playing a game showing up the inequalities of the distribution of resources in the world, and then a simple supper afterwards. So anyone in the community that's interested is certainly welcome to come to that.
Thank you for sharing.
Free will offering.
Thank you for sharing. So that's the Society of Friends. Friends Meeting House is on 1904 East Main Street in Urbana. They meet on Sundays at 10:30 in the morning, and they're having a special event next Saturday dealing with world resources and their scarcity at 5 p.m. I just took notes on what our caller said. I didn't know about it in advance, so it's nice to have that shared.
Sure, and my brother and his family are Quakers.
Uh-huh.
And I like to go to Quaker meeting as another change of pace in terms of a lot of meditation and silence.
Silence, uh-huh.
And what strikes me is that so many religious groups have a steady diet of only one kind of thing when there's all sorts of things people could do, and it's interesting that the groups don't really themselves branch out as much into different ways of doing things.
Now, Jim, when you tell people that you're practicing seven different religions, I suppose you may get some humorous questions. One our good engineer here asked before you came on was, does he use Excel to keep him straight?
Right. It's interesting because I don't want to just have them in my head, but I like to be part of different communities, and I seem to just sidle in pretty easily. I take part every once in a while in Muslim prayers, which are in Arabic, and very few Arabic words do I know, but I like to express my solidarity with Muslim people by worshiping with them. There's been a lot of controversy, of course, because there are suicide bombers practicing a twisted form of Islam. But Muhammad himself said, don't even bother to try and convert Christians and Jews because they already believe in the same God that we do. And my mission is to bring the God, the one God, in which Jews and Christians already believe, to people who don't have such a God, which is the Arabs.
Now, this sounds mean, and maybe it is, but by just taking what you like from these religions, are you avoiding discipline? Are you avoiding the hard stuff, like Muslims are supposed to pray five times a day, and do you do that?
No. Well, maybe. Maybe I'm skimming off the top and picking the easy fruit. Having seven religions, there's plenty of places I can go, and one can spend quite a bit of time in all the variety of religions. But I had a discipline in reading the Tao Te Ching, where I would read a poem each day, and since then I've picked up from the internet mostly about seven different translations of the Tao Te Ching, and I bought a book that has the Chinese in it, and I have a friend of mine who's Chinese that's helping me understand the Chinese language. So there are disciplines involved as well.
Jim, there are different ways to spell Tao and Tao Te Ching. Could you give some of the spellings, alternative spellings, for listeners who might want to find that?
Well, the traditional way, and I'm still using this traditional language, is to spell Tao as T-A-O.
But pronounced, so as, if it, would be, but pronounced would be, as if it were a D, as in
yes,
David.
Yes, pronounced as a D, and some people will use it as D-A-O.
But you spell it T-A-O, which is the most traditional in English,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
And then Te, which means virtue or power, is T-E. And then Jing is book, and that's C-H-I-N-G.
So for listeners who would like to find that, you can find it if you're an English speaker, T-A-O, second word T-E, third word C-H-I-N-G.
And if you Google it, you'll get about five translations.
Okay. Now, how did you get, we left out a part of your life that was very significant, and you mentioned in your book, A Song of Faith from 2008, the time you spent in Cleveland after seminary.
Right. And I worked for a black Baptist church in inner city Cleveland, being a white suburban Presbyterian. So it was a very nice stretch. And my family lived in the ghetto just around the corner from the church. And
you were married, had children?
Right. And my son went to kindergarten, my older son. And he was the only white child in his all-black class. But, we were a little worried whether he'd be accepted. It turned out his neighborhood name was Dragon Breath. So we knew that he'd been accepted and was part of the gang by then.
And but what did you do there?
Youth and civil rights kind of work. And the part of what was happening, this would be 66 to 69. A nephew of Martin Luther King came to town and organized something called Operation Breadbasket. What we did was boycotted a grocery chain. We had asked them, out of a concern for justice, to hire more black people and promote more, and they just ignored us. We boycotted them, and produce was rotting on the shelves, and for some reason they then began to listen, and they agreed that they would hire more blacks and promote them. And Doc came up from Atlanta, Martin Luther King Jr., came up to help us celebrate the victory. So I met him at a dinner for all the ministers that were backing the project, got to shake his hand, and that was kind of a high point.
And were you the only white minister in that particular group?
I think there were two or three of them.
Two or three, uh-huh. Now, just to jump quickly to the present, in Indianapolis, you also have been, since you've lived there, active in many social concerns. Let me give the phone numbers again for people who might want to call with a comment or question, and then I want you to, if you would, tell us a little bit about that. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 will put you onto several local lines here in the studio. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free call. So tell us about your life in Indianapolis a bit.
Well, when civil rights was big, I was into civil rights, and when the Iraq War happened, and it was getting close to happening, I had the impression that this would be the way not to go, and the whole idea that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were in cahoots was totally without basis, and ex-President Bush has admitted that since in the recent past. So I joined with a lot of others in trying to see if we couldn't persuade the country not to go into the war. It was kind of heady times. There were, organized through the internet and with no really central leadership, but there were a million people in Madrid and a million people in Rome and so on. And we had some pretty big numbers for us here in Indy, demonstrating in what turned into the run-up to the war against doing it. And after a while, I became a board member and then president of the Indy Peace and Justice Center.
So the Indianapolis Peace and Justice Center is continuing. Are you the president now?
No, past president. I stopped. My term stopped last spring.
And since we do have listeners, both over the air and online in the Indianapolis area, how might people in that area contact the Indianapolis Peace and Justice Center?
Well,
a website or
IndyPeaceAndJustice.org. So Indy is I-N-D-Y, peaceandjustice.org.
Great.
Is the website.
Thank you. And we do have another caller waiting, this time from Urbana on line number one. Yes, you're on the air with Jim Wolf.
Hello. Could you talk a little bit more about your concept of faith, specifically faith in what or in whom?
Sure, sure.
And you might want to hang on, caller, to ask a follow-up. Go ahead, Jim.
Faith is a very basic attitude, and it is developed, I think, the earliest of all the stages in Erickson's Eight Stages of Man is a stage of trust or mistrust. I think it begins with parents, and if you get cuddled enough and if you get nourishment when you need it, then you get a notion that the parents are trustworthy, it's a trustworthy world. And I think this is the basis for religious faith, which is trusting that the universe is friendly, that the world will be at least most of the time or some of the time in your favor. And I make a big distinction then between faith and belief. Beliefs are propositions, beliefs are statements. And for me, I have a very firm faith in God, but the attributes of God, the statements about God have changed quite a bit during my lifetime of 70 years or so.
Caller, would you like to follow up?
No, fine. Thanks. Thank you very much.
All right. And in terms of your faith in God that you say is firm, but your beliefs about the attributes of God have changed, would you say that they've gotten vaguer, or is that not fair?
Well, I think we have a basic choice. It's sometimes called Plato's paradox, between what we emphasize in the divine. The paradox runs like this: if God is all good, all-knowing, and all-powerful, then there wouldn't be evil in the world, because God would know about it. God would be good enough to oppose it. He was powerful enough to get rid of it. So what's it doing here is the paradox in this statement of Plato's paradox. I emphasize the goodness of God and not necessarily the power. I like my best theological statement is that God is love. Love is not all-powerful, but it is powerful, and it moves in the right direction. If God was powerful but he wasn't good, he wouldn't be worth worshiping. So I emphasize the goodness of God and the, as I mentioned before, the nonviolent resistance that Jesus does against empire as the attributes of Jesus that I emphasize.
I want to get back to that in a minute, but we are about halfway through our program. Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with James S. Wolfe, W-O-L-F-E, from Indianapolis, where he's been a professor of religion and religion and sociology for many years. He's the author of his 2008 book, the one that I've read, is called A Song of Faith. And we're talking with him by phone. Jim practices seven different religions simultaneously, and we're talking with him about that here on Keeping the Faith today. If you have a comment or question, do call us, 1-800-222-9455, wherever the program is heard. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, get one of our local lines by punching in 333-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs, although Don Nolan fills in so often that I probably should call him a co-host. This program is a weekly program here on WILL, AM 580, and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, a program locally produced by Illinois Public Media. We are supported in part by the University YMCA, and at the Y this week on Tuesday noon at the University of Illinois, a very interesting topic, a new mascot for a new millennium. So Tuesday, March 9, students from Intersections Living Learning Community, and Lydia Curry, program coordinator, will talk about that issue of a new mascot for the University of Illinois now that the chief has been officially retired. That's a free lecture, free discussion at the Y. You can buy food there at the Y Eatery if you like, or bring your own lunch, or simply go for the conversation. Friday Forum at the University Y, March 12, this coming Friday Forum, Paul McNamara, who's professor of consumer and family economics at the university, will talk about collaborations for change, building effective partnerships for social entrepreneurship using case studies, including rebuilding a university in war-torn Sierra Leone and a micro-health insurance program. So this is all part of social entrepreneurship as a force for change that is the Friday Forum series for this semester, several, seven or eight different lectures on Friday at noon at the Y. Again, food's available, good Thai food from the Thai Eatery at very reasonable prices, particularly for college students. But community people are invited, and you can usually find parking places by noon on Fridays, since there's so few classes anymore on Fridays, and so you can get to the Y at noon that way, or you can take the public transportation, of course, buses go by there about 30 times an hour. If you enjoy Keeping the Faith, you would also enjoy on WILL TV Religion and Ethics News Weekly, Sunday at 12:30, just after noon. Coming up on Keeping the Faith the next few weeks, Cindy Shepherd next week talking about mission through fair trade in Nicaragua. On March 21st, the Muslim community locally is sponsoring a new health center. We'll learn about that from the chair of the board of directors, Professor Irfan Ahmad, and the new medical director, Dr. Shamim Sadia. She will tell us about what it's like running a often free clinic for people in great need for medical services. March 28th, our guest will be Chris Valillo. We'll be talking about the music and values of Abraham Lincoln. Chris Valillo is a performer and a composer, and we'll be listening to some of his music and hearing him talk about it. Well, let's get back to our guest, Jim Wolf, and I see we do have another caller, not quite ready yet, I guess. Jim, let's see. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how you can have. You were talking about Plato's paradox and the notion of God being both good and whether God is powerful or not. And you said you focus on the loving side, the goodness of God. But isn't that a problem when you're trying to follow three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, that all have a very different story of how evil came into the world in Genesis, which all three of those religions see as scripture?
Sure. I wouldn't take any of them literally, so I don't have a real problem. I'm not sure, you know, evil seems to have been part of the world as long as we've known it.
But in terms of those religions thinking that evil was not a part of God, and yet God allowed evil in allowing freedom. Now, admittedly, Plato had written earlier than that, but or had written before Christianity began or Islam began, but Judaism had considered those options pretty thoroughly. And Judaism is one of the seven religions you practice. So do you have problems with that?
Not really. Okay. Not really. I was just doing some work on this, actually this weekend. In the language of myth, what is said to be at the beginning is what's primary. What's said to be at the end is what's finally true. But the time references are just to give emphasis and not really to plug them into a particular time. Adam means earthling. Man will be called Adam because he comes from the ground, which is Adamah in the Hebrew. And it's not, for me, about a foreparent long ago, but I think everyone is Adam, and everyone is confronted with possibilities of good and evil, and each of us is a mixture of dirt and breath. And as long as we have breath, we're alive, and when breath leaves, then it's ashes to ashes and dust to dust.
And in terms of notions in the scriptures of spirit, do you see spirit enduring even after the body turns to dust?
Certainly not an individual spirit. It seems to be that Jesus, among others, was filled with the Spirit of God, and the Spirit of God acted through him, but the Spirit also blows through us, the same Spirit. So I don't see spirit like as some sort of substance or soul.
But there does seem to be some witness, at least, in the New Testament that Christians see a scripture that the Spirit of Jesus endured past death.
Well, and I think when we follow him, we take up his Spirit. But I don't see Jesus himself surviving death, though his influence continues if people follow Jesus.
So the New Testament witness that people did see Jesus after death, you would discount as myth or
or legend. They're not really consistent things. Jesus shows up again, getting his same body back with the wounds that he had as he was killed. And he eats fish, and he breaks bread, but he also passes through walls, and he ascends into the sky. Galileo took out his telescope to try and find him. And there's something going on here. It doesn't like bother me because I don't take it literally anyway. And I think that religious language, to do its work, has to be peculiar. It has to not convey information but insight. And for that purpose, being odd, being peculiar, not working itself out in a neat way is actually a good thing, an asset.
We have another caller wanting to join the conversation from Bloomington. Yes, you're on the air with our guest, Jim S. Wolfe.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to ask you a question. A lot of people in the scientific community see evolution as just religion and faith as a kind of a human invention, and you talked about that a little bit earlier, that exists solely to kind of keep pieces of society together and going on to pass on your genes from, generation to generation. And so there's no aspect of God in that. So I wanted to ask you about the validity of that and, how evolution fits into your own beliefs and your sort of religions that you follow. So I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
I probably take the most common point of view, which is evolution is God's way of creating. I certainly take evolution at face value as the kind of process that's been involved. I think we humans are descended from a common ancestor of ourselves and the apes, and this doesn't provide any problem for me. One reason would be that I don't see the story, for instance, in Genesis 1 as an account that is trying to be scientific and could conflict with a scientific account. For my money, it's a liturgy and not a description. It's a responsive reading. The king, at New Year's time, when they would celebrate receiving the world again from God's hands, the king would say the main parts, and the people would say, and the evening and the morning was the first day, and the evening and the morning was the second day, and the third day, and so on. So it's a way not of describing, but of celebrating receiving the world from God's hands.
And if part of that story includes the lack of gratitude of the earliest people to God for this world and for their own life, what does that teach us about the nature of humanity and perhaps sin?
Sure. I think gratitude is a great thing, and one of my favorite hymns is Now Thank We All Our God, with hearts and hands and voices, who wondrous things has done and whom this world rejoices. It's good, I think, for us to express our gratitude, and it's a shame that when it doesn't happen.
We're talking with Jim Wolfe, who practices seven different faiths. Let me mention them again for listeners who may have tuned in since the program began. Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, Taoist, Muslim, Wiccan, and humanist. Why not be a Baha'i, which also sees truth in all the major world religions and tries to take what's best from them?
I'm sure what I'm doing is very parallel to what happens in Baha'i. I go to a weekly Jesus seminar group, and we're mostly reading books from the Jesus Seminar New Testament scholars. But we're actually having somebody from Baha'i come and talk to us this next time. I don't really know much about the additional prophet. Muhammad saw himself as the final prophet after Jesus and Moses and Abraham. And the prophet of Baha'i sees himself as coming all along and adding even more beyond Muhammad. It's very good on being pro-science, very good on the liberation of women. So I'm sure when I hear about it, I'll have a lot that I can resonate with.
Jim, in your 2008 book, A Song of Faith, it has a subtitle, Plus the Gist of the Bible. And, of course, people like Thomas Jefferson have rewritten the New Testament and taken out things they didn't like miracles. When you've done your list of the scriptures, you think it would be good for people to read over the course of a year from the Hebrew Bible, from the Christian New Testament. How did you make your selections, and what were you thinking about as you were writing these commentaries for each of these days' scripture readings for a course of a year that you've included as part of this book?
There wasn't any explicit plan, but I wanted to represent almost every book in the Bible with a chapter, and I do include the whole Gospel of Mark, which is the earliest and shortest of the Gospels. I had run into loads of passages, and these were the ones that I think would be, if you have them all kind of behind your belt, then you're basically set on having the highlights of the Bible, and you can then dig in further. I showed it to one New Testament scholar, and he thought I didn't have enough from Romans, but I think I got three chapters from Romans. It's, that's where the theology of St. Paul is most articulated, but I didn't want to overdo him, and I wanted to make sure I got things in from... The diversity in the Bible is just intense and wonderful, and love songs like Song of Solomon and the cynicism of Ecclesiastes.
And the violence of Joshua.
Yeah, right.
So you left that out.
Well, yeah. you can learn a lot about really nasty holy wars that a caller was asking about evolution. I think there's been some development anyway within religion, and at least some of what came through from the past that wasn't too great has been superseded. The whole saga in the Hebrew Bible starts from a tribal god who is the god for Jews only, and everybody else, of course, has their own god, but don't you pay attention to them. The whole experience of exile brings in a new perspective where God is the God of all peoples and not just of the Jews. So you can see a lot of development within Scripture.
Jim, we mentioned earlier that you are the past president of the Indianapolis Peace and Justice Center. Tell us about what it means that you're the convener of Common Bonds. What is Common Bonds?
It's an umbrella for progressive groups. And it has no money, and it makes no statements, and it's only...
Has no staff.
has no staff.
All volunteers.
And its only function is to try and help different progressive groups to get the word out on what they're doing and to marshal support for each other.
And that's in the Indianapolis metropolitan area.
Right. We did in Bloomington, Indiana. We did. I haven't heard about it lately, but we spawned a daughter in Bloomington where they were trying a similar kind of point of view. There are so many organizations, and yet a lot of them are on the same wavelength, or at least enough on the same wavelength that there are things that they can do together. One thing I do is put out a weekly email that goes to like 2,600 people that says what's going on in India and around the state of Indiana in terms of peace, justice, labor, race, gay rights, women's rights, and the environment. And that helps to keep people informed about what's going on.
We're down to our last 5 or 6 minutes, but we do have time for another caller or two if you keep your questions or comments short. The numbers again, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, long distance 1-800-222-9455. You mentioned, Jim, gay rights, women's liberation. Which of the seven religions that you practice is most open to gay people, to women?
Oh, that's a really good question. Probably the Muslims, at least in terms of custom, would have the least for women. Though it's interesting that Muhammad's wife was the breadwinner in the family, Khadija, and Muhammad himself was very open to women being leaders. I've written an essay and put it on my website called "It's Okay to Be Gay: A Biblical Perspective."
What is your website?
My website is pages.uindy.edu/tilde, the tilde sign, JWOLFE. And I think that a few passages have been exalted beyond their worth anyway and misconstrued to give the impression that Judaism and Christianity are opposed to people being gay.
Let me give the website again. Pages, P-A-G-E-S, dot, U-N-D, dot, E-D-U, slash, then I missed the rest.
Oh, tilde, the tilde sign, and then J. Wolf, J-W-O-L-F-E.
Okay, a tilde sign, is that just a one line at the very top?
Yeah, it's a little squiggly line that's up pretty much on the first row, maybe first row capitals, of along with the numbers.
Huh. All right, new word for me.
Word.
Maybe I've seen that before, but I'd forgotten. Above the tab key, our engineer tells us. All right.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
I do see it now. Very good. I remember that. Okay. what have you been most criticized for in your trying to practice more than one religion?
Oh, there's not been. A lot of people have been intrigued. I haven't really encountered criticism.
Now, you mentioned in your book that you had difficulty finding a church to hire you. Did you find that was because of your work with civil rights more than anything else at that point in your life?
I think so, yeah. It was Black Power era, and Black Power, the Black churches wanted Black ministers in the late 60s, early 70s, and I had been too blackened by my experience for the white churches to want me. I remember some who praised my integrity but didn't give me an offer.
So there were some costs to your commitment to civil rights for African Americans.
Sure, sure.
Do you regret it?
No, not at all. And
does your wife?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I've had four careers and I'm back to career number two, so I've never been in any conventional sense the success, but keeping my integrity and the university is really pretty open to racial justice and to people feeling free to express their views. I think churches are often harder on people who are forthright, and a lot of ministers don't really say what they believe. They don't even say what they've been taught in seminary because they're afraid it won't fly well.
A previous guest on this program, Jack Good, A.J. Good, has a book out about just that called The Dishonest Church, where the ministers aren't willing to share what they learned in seminary with the people in the pew.
But for me, you know, I just say what I think because it doesn't matter if they don't call me back because I'm not depending on them for money. So when
sure.
I do guest preaching.
Jim, you had a B.A. in philosophy from Oberlin. You went on and got a Master of Divinity from Union Seminary in New York, a Ph.D. from Berkeley in religion. Then you went and got another Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science in computer science. Why is that?
Well, when I was an academic, my first job was as a fill-in for somebody who was away on a sabbatical, and they came back. This was at University of British Columbia in Canada, and then I taught I was a political scientist for a year and taught American government and political ideologies and totalitarianism. And then I taught great books for a year up there. And then I got a job at Iowa State, and it was one year at a time, teaching both in religious studies and in sociology. So it was kind of a dream job with catering to my strengths.
Except that it was just a year at a time.
Just a year at a time. And so about 3 years went by, and after my fourth year, they said, no, we're not going to hire you again. It was soft money. We don't got any more. Get out of here. So, and then I just couldn't find anything. And I'd already done my income tax on a basic program that I wrote, and my younger son was interested in computers. So he said, Dad, why don't you quit that religious study stuff and do something decent like computers? So I said,
we're going to have to stop
there, right,
Jim. We're going to have to stop there. We are out of time, but it's a fascinating life story. And again, James S. Wolfe, W-O-L-F-E, author of The Song of Faith plus The Gist of the Bible, has been our guest today. Jim practices seven different religions simultaneously. If you missed part of this program, go online to will.illinois.edu, and you'll be able to hear the rest of it. It will be archived there in about a week. And if you've missed previous programs, feel free to go there to hear them as well. My name is Steve Shoemaker, and thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.